If you've ever wanted to know how to correctly describe a blacksmith shop and roleplay your blacksmith for your players in your D&D game, today's the episode for you. It's part two of our mini-series with Wasatch Forge, a local blacksmith shop right here in Utah, where we talk with D&D aficionados Matt and Stan, who are also master blacksmiths. If you want to check out part one, go back to our previous episode where we dissect a little bit about their opinions, as it were, with D&D. Welcome to How to Be a Better DM, the show for dungeon masters who want to make every session special without devoting hours and hours and hours and tons of money. Today, we're talking, like I said, about blacksmithing. And I'm your host, Justin Lewis. I have been helping dungeon masters, old and young alike, for over 140 episodes. Actually, this is our 150th episode, so a little celebration to us. But without further ado, let me give you the rest of my talk with Matt and Stan on blacksmithing. All right, so we are going into the blacksmith shop. This is the shop floor, I'm assuming.
Yep, 100%. That's what you call it. This is kind of our cold work area where we do all of our grinding.
So what does that mean, cold work?
That means it's already been forged.
Okay.
And is now going to be finished into its final shape if it's not just rough forged.
Okay.
You know, a set of tongs and things like that, we don't do hardly any cold work on them. It's all hot work. But knives, swords, blades of any kind, it requires a large amount of cold work.
Okay. And that would meaning like honing the blade to refine its edge?
Whether it's as basic as using stones to refine your edges. And that sounds like Stone Age level technology, but I'm talking about, what's the term?
Like a grinding wheel?
Yeah, but it's a specific treadle-powered sandstone wheel.
A grinding wheel? I don't know.
Yeah, but it's not that in any case.
I don't know.
But
is it a grinding wheel?
But,
there's a word for it.
There is a word for it.
Awesome.
I just lost it.
Cool.
But that, you know, you have this fine sandstone, you know, and Arkansas water stones are a modern representation of it, where we found a vein of good stone for making whetstones out of. Hmm. But it's a large wheel-based whetstone that you step on and it turns.
Gotcha. Okay.
That is very similar to my line of belt grinders there. So
obviously in D&D, adventurers go into a D&D shop. The dungeon master would be explaining, this is what you guys see. They're not going to see belt grinders.
Right, but they will see, and I'll come up with it, but a treadle-powered grinder, grinding stone.
Yeah, I mean, all you want. I'll get to it maybe one day.
Literally, you guys will leave. We'll lock the gate and be like...
And you're like, wait, I remember. Cool.
There you go.
Okay, so aside from a grinding stone that has... it's foot-powered, what else would characters see coming into a blacksmith shop on average, you know, the village blacksmith shop?
So your blacksmith shop has to have a anvil of some kind.
Okay.
Whether it be one of my favorite examples is a stone in the field, in an Ireland field, where it has some different little cut-ins into it and a flat section, and people are like, oh, this is a blacksmith shop. And it's literally a field in the middle of Ireland. And like, what do you mean? Well, this is an anvil. No, that's a hunk of granite lying in a field. Yeah, otherwise known as a stone anvil.
Huh.
Yeah, but a nice piece of granite.
But it's worked, yeah.
Yeah,
that's cool.
So you don't have to have a large chunk of iron with a steel top on it. And by the way, under no circumstances does a blacksmith anvil in medieval times look like a 19th century anvil.
Really?
They're not that.
Mm. So what do they look like?
A large lump of steel. Relatively
so
square,
it's just like
and
a big,
flat top.
Okay.
Yep.
Just like a, almost like a table almost. Like.
No, we're talking like fist size.
Oh, okay. So basically the width of this. But
yeah, so
just
imagine
like that.
This as being a square.
Interesting.
That's the grand majority of your anvils throughout history forever.
If you look up Viking
anvils, stake
like
anvil.
That, you'll
that
see
is
a lot.
Not a small anvil.
Well.
That is a, it's a regular anvil. We are so... You know, and you look, there's 13 or 14 anvils here. And the wealth of iron and steel in these is bonkers.
Yeah.
Compared to traditional Viking anvils. And yes, in some big cities, in castles with blacksmiths who are owned by the king, they would have bigger hexagonal anvils that are a good, you know, 20 inches across and have multiple people working on it and multiple workstations and things like that. But for the grand majority of your village blacksmiths, they are 14, 15 pounds on the high end.
Wow. That's really cool.
Totally makes sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah, your hammer face is not going to do work on the entire anvil surface. Mm. So why would you have more of that incredibly valuable item? And it's not the fact that, well, I have it. Great. So I have one, and my apprentice has one. Mm. Not I have a big one. Mm. You know, you look at that face, it's 4 square inches.
Yeah.
And that's a relatively large hammer.
And that's a pretty good-sized hammer.
Okay.
Well,
and
for
so
you
can work all that entire surface of that relatively small anvil and get really good work done.
Wonderful.
I have every intent of using an old gravestone as a granite anvil and forging out a blade on it. And Holland Anvil actually recently gave me one of their little Viking stump anvils.
Yeah.
And I really want to make a high-end, great-looking knife off of it and go, you don't need an anvil.
Yeah.
You need a piece of steel to hit.
So with your gravestone blade, don't kill me and send my soul to Avernus. I would rather avoid that, just so you know. Also, if you could, try and stand close together because there is just one mic.
Yep,
we're trying.
Just so that way we don't want to lose what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, so they would have an anvil. Not exactly looking like this.
Like these. Mm-hmm.
This is the stuff of cartoons, not D&D.
Correct.
Right?
And 19th century.
And 19th century.
And 19th century.
What else would they have in their D&D shop?
So you've got to have a forge. You've got to have a capability to heat the metal up to 2,000, 3,000 degrees. At 3,000, it starts melting. Yes, I know.
Okay.
But
I didn't know that, so...
so 2450 is where steel melts.
Okay.
Wrought iron melts closer to 27, if memory serves. So you've got to have something to hit it on, you've got to have something to heat it, and you've got to have something to hit it with. So you need a couple of hammers. In my opinion, a blacksmith shop must have 3 hammers.
Okay.
You've got to have a hand hammer that does most of your work, you've got to have a fine work hammer, and then you've got to have a hammer that is wielded by your apprentice. Now, keep in mind, basically every blacksmith shop is going to have an apprentice. How much do apprentices cost? Nothing. Food and board. Mm. And to get the small capability of a hydraulic press or a power hammer in a... Yeah, it's still warm. In a 14-year-old kid wielding a two-handed hammer, there will always be one. There's always some kid that will take up the apprenticeship and do work for you.
For food, right.
For food and board. It's easy to get apprentices as a blacksmith.
Wow.
So, forge.
Is that even true today?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's
There's
cool.
nothing that summons 14-year-old kids like a hammer and anvil.
And fire, right?
Yeah, and fire.
That's awesome.
So you've got to have an anvil. You've got to have 3 hammers. You've got to have several sets of tongs. Now, over here in my shop, I have a large duplicate amount of tongs, but that's because I do lots of classes.
Wow.
So there are 8 or 10 of this style of tong and this style of tong, which are the ones we mostly do in the class, but then everything else is for specific purposes.
Wow.
And once again, we have a large variety of hammers here. All of these are basically student hammers. That's actually one of my personal hammers. Everything else is for student use. So you don't need more than 3 hammers.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind that when you have an apprentice wielding
a sledge.
Sledgehammer. Mm-hmm. The capability to use top tools. They're not hammers. So those rest on the item being forged and the anvil, and then I strike that surface there. And it lets me do finer work.
Interesting.
And the specifics of these two tools, this one here has got a nice flat edge, which is not typical of most hammers. Most hammers have a little bit of a rounded edge. It helps you move material a little bit better. And then this one would be used for making rounds or making even stock. If you want to have a particular, I'm trying to find a specific example, but maybe gates that need a cylindrical rod, you'd be using this on the top of your bar while you've got your 14-year-old strike in the back.
Yeah, and for listeners, this hammer that we're looking at, or what did you call this?
Top tools.
Top tool. This top tool that we're looking at almost looks like a Lego hand.
Yeah. It really does, 100%.
That's an excellent way to describe that. But yeah, it's a steel Lego hand that's a struck tool.
Yeah, so you've got a surface that puts the indent that you're aiming for, and then a tall end on it that can take the abuse of being struck.
So theoretically, within any world, really, there is a smith who makes the hammers that smiths use.
Absolutely.
And that could be a really cool adventure to go find the smith, right? The guy who makes the hammers for everyone, you know?
Yep. And I've always wanted to... So how many gods of smithing are there?
Oh, gosh.
Just about every pantheon.
Which pantheon, yeah. All right?
Yeah. Has one.
Yeah.
Because it is so important.
Yeah.
And so you got some really cool opportunities there. And, you know, just think about the tools that he would have and the tools that he would use. And how that could... Oh, man, I could imagine you do a campaign where his hammer has been stolen and broken. Mm. And therefore, every other smith's hammer breaks.
Yeah.
Just chaos.
You work 8 hours a day. You spend time with your family, and when you come home, you do work around the house. And it seems that you never have as much time as you would like to prepare for your D&D sessions. Does this sound like you? Wouldn't it be amazing to have endless material prepared for your D&D sessions anyways? That's where Roll and Play Press comes in. Roll and Play Press provides D&D 5e compatible material for any type of session. Running a one-shot? Check out their One-Shot Wonders book with over 100 one-shot ideas. Getting started with a new sci-fi campaign? Get their Game Master's Sci-Fi Toolkit to have your games much more prepared with much less effort. Why reinvent the wheel? Check out Roll and Play Press at rollandplaypress.com, see what they have to offer, and get a 10% discount when you buy something by using the code BETTERDM10, that's BETTERDM10, at checkout. Give yourself just a little bit extra help so that you can continue being the world's greatest dungeon master.
That's well, it's an apocalypse.
Like, it would be like, yeah. Google breaking. Yeah. Well, maybe a little bit worse, but yeah, that's crazy.
So
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So they would have the forge, they would have something to heat the metal, to
yep.
hit the metal,
yep.
and something to hit the metal on.
Yep.
Also an apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that, like, you think if you put this in, people would be kind of impressed or like, wow, that seems interesting?
Okay, so first thing, we'll talk about one of my pet peeves. Mm-hmm. Under no circumstances do you cast iron, no spell included, in a blacksmith shop. Mm-hmm. So under no circumstances is somebody pouring steel into a mold and making a sword.
Like they do in movies.
Like they do in movies. Literally, I watch that and I'm like, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm done. My suspension of disbelief has completely broken, and I can't handle this.
Sorry, Lord of the Rings.
I mean, okay. Magic is magic.
Yeah, yeah.
But the problem when you get iron up to that temperature, and you're in an oxygen-rich environment, it will literally burn. Mm. It won't melt. It'll burn.
Wow.
So it doesn't work.
That's interesting. Okay. So for all of you at home... Don't have your iron poured into these molds. They would take it like...
For swords.
For swords.
Yep.
Would they do that for anything else or just...
Arrowheads.
Arrowheads.
Arrowheads you can make out of bronze, copper,
okay,
brass, tin, and you can pour that into a wooden mold. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves actually poured shitty arrowheads into wooden casks. And I'm like, yep, that's how you could do that. Because you got to remember, we're not making arrowheads out of steel.
To last forever, right?
Under what circumstances would I ever give my enemy quality steel? Or quality iron?
And it doesn't take a whole lot of material either. I mean, we're talking about a quarter's worth, like a U.S. quarter's worth of material for an arrowhead.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we've done some post-apocalyptic...
I did that a week ago.
experiments and fun just things. Play with it. Where it's like, wait a minute, is this real? Can we make a deadly point on the end of an arrow with a quarter's worth of material or a quarter?
And did you?
Absolutely.
I've got a little, it doesn't have any fletchings on it, but I got a little arrow back there that's got some points.
That sounds like a really cool video.
So that's one of the biggest problems that Wasatch Forge has, is we do all this cool stuff and we don't have anybody, there's no videographer apprentice. That comes in and says, so we'll do all the things.
Yeah, I'm actually a little bit upset with that right now. I've been, we're doing a little challenge among some of the employees at work right now. We've all been given about 20 grams of...
It's about 40 grams.
It is in between 20 and 30 is what the paper says.
All right.
of meteorite. And our task is to incorporate that into a blade somehow. Mm. Everybody's very, very
celestial sword. it's literally celestial iron.
That's true.
So with that little challenge, most of the other participants have been making it into kind of a Damascus thing. Mm. They're putting it in a canister with powders and welding it together. I'm going significantly more traditional on it. I'm taking a really, it's wrought iron, but it's 200-year-old wrought iron. And it's every little piece of wrought iron I've ever failed on, which means that I hit it hot, it split apart, and I went, I'm not good enough to put this back together. I'm going to set this off to the side.
Mm-hmm. And cut off the little pieces.
Yep. Set them off to the side, took out that bag. Now I've got a lot more skill on hand to do that, so I consolidated all this together. It's now one block of iron, and then I've put the meteorite into that, and that's becoming my blade. But the hard part is that that's a poor quality iron. Mm-hmm. So I'm going through a couple of historical processes where I'm going to
upgrade
my material by the process is more or less baking my iron with carbon rich materials, and that carbon will seep in and diffuse into my material.
Yeah.
And I'll choose some unique carbon sources. If I really want to get weird with it, I could even use my own hair if I wanted to. I could use wood from the house I grew up in. I could use a bear pelt. That's something that was historically done before.
Yeah.
Strength of a bear in his axe.
Oh, yeah. You've got the strength of a bear in some of your materials. So they would just be taking anything that's got a carbon source to it.
That's so interesting.
Turning it into more or less charcoal, however gross the charcoal may be.
Yeah.
And then infusing that into materials. So something that Matt's just brought out here is something that's really, really cool. This here is, while it may just look like a hunk of iron that's kind of vaguely sword shaped.
Got some texture in it.
Yeah. So for listeners, it looks about the shape of the giant Super Star Destroyer from Episode 6 of Star Wars. And if you look close, you can almost see like the turrets and everything. But
So there's some.
No, that is not what.
But the really cool part about this material is that it's been diffused with some extra special materials. You want to go into that a little bit, Matt?
Yeah, so I had a guy reach out to me 6 months ago, and says, my dad's on his deathbed, and I want to have him, and he wants to have him, put into a sword.
Wow.
How do we make that happen? So what this is literally using his cremains and actually diffusing some of the primarily phosphorus, because that's what will diffuse in.
Mm.
Everybody thinks it's carbon, but the whole point of cremains is to get rid of the carbon.
Mm.
All of that literally turns into carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide and goes out the chimney at the crematorium.
Huh.
So you're left with ash.
Which is not carbon.
Fascinating. By definition. And so I did multiple billets of Damascus, laminated steel, and diffused the phosphorus into that steel, and et cetera, and now have a what we call memorial blade.
Wow.
That is made out of this gentleman's father, which is kind of weird, but
dang,
kind of cool.
That is super cool. All you need to do now is go get some holy water and just bathe it in holy water, and that thing is like ready to kill vampires.
Oh yeah,
or make them.
Or make them. Actually, you could. Yeah,
there's a lot of cool things you do with that. I mean, the process that we described, I imagine, could be used for if you want to go down a necromantic path. You could totally have something along those lines.
Yeah.
You could do something along the lines of it being blessed. You could have all sorts of different cool stuff. But while a lot of times we're bringing it a little bit more back down to earth, being like, okay, well, we see your magic and say, dumb. Yeah. But you can totally do stuff that is. That seems kind of magical. I'm putting a meteorite into a knife.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of meteorite, because meteorite is kind of expensive.
Yeah.
But that's totally something that I'm doing, and I'm only binding it with materials that are hundreds of years old.
But it's still very special.
Very special, very cool. I can't claim that it's magical. I'm sure some people would think that that's really cool. And
but you can't claim that it's not.
But that's true.
Yes, you can. Absolutely. Well, okay.
Yeah, I don't think it has any special properties other than it probably will not be the best performing knife out of that competition that we're doing. But, you know, it's something that's really cool where if you could imagine magic being a real thing, you could totally apply rules to that in your game.
You may be asking yourself, how do I get more out of How to Be a Better DM? You probably want even more tips, more entertainment, or perhaps just exclusive access to a secret society of people bent on ruling the world. Well, we don't actually have desires to rule the world, but it does sound like what you want and what you need is to join our Patreon. You'll get access to our private Discord, which will give you direct access to all the hosts of this show, as well as our other Dungeon Masters who are just like you. You'll also be able to make fan requests for How to Be a Better DM. And lastly, you just help support the show so we can give you ever better content. If you want to join the Patreon, go to sessionzerostudios.com/startadventure and join our Patreon today.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about power components a little bit before, and you know, taking the bear pelt or taking the bones of a bear
and carburizing your
steel with that is something that was done. And we could really get into a lot of the ritual of blacksmithing with the time and the quench and things of that nature. But that's a heck of a rabbit hole.
That's a history lesson. That's a whole history lesson to go down into.
Yeah. I gotta say, I have just enjoyed our time together so much. Unfortunately, we have come to the end. We've been here actually longer than I had planned to be.
But I think I warned you.
I gotta say, I was drawn in a little bit too much myself. But before we give our listener just one last tip from each of you on blacksmiths in D&D or DTRPGs, how can people connect with Wasatch Forge, see what's going on here, and just get more involved if they're interested?
So the, you know, as was mentioned before, one of the big things that we do is we are a teaching school, and we've got the Wasatch Forge Discord. You can find it on my webpage, and there's multiple different little tiers for that where you will have access to us as professional blacksmiths. If you have any questions like that, that is the best place to reach out to us. And of course, if you're in town, take a class. It is, we've been doing this for, we just had our 10-year anniversary.
Oh, wow.
We've been doing it forever, and it's remarkable to watch these individuals who have no craft go, wait a minute, I can make anything?
Mm.
Yeah, you can basically make anything.
I don't have to buy this steel from Amazon?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And now you have steel as one of the spokes on your craftsman's wheel. A lot of people have leather, a lot of people have woodwork, but as soon as you're like, wait a minute, I can forge all of my own tools, I can forge all of my own metal components, it's like, wait a minute, I can make that 6-board chest with real traditional hinges and things. It's remarkably fulfilling to be able to go, I made this for you.
Mm.
Oh, wow, what do you mean you made that? I put it in my forge, I heated it up, and I shaped this for you.
Wow.
It's uniquely fulfilling to have an heirloom that you give somebody.
Wow.
So.
Dang, that is awesome. Yeah. So if you want any more information, check out the website. We'll put the links in the show notes. Also, we have encouraged Matt to make some sort of online offering for those of you outside the Utah. So continually check the website. And
reach out to us.
Yes.
Because I would love to be able to service that need. Because if, you know, back at the very beginning of the episode, my first experience with the blacksmithing community was a good old boys club. And it drove me crazy. It broke my heart to one degree or another. And so I try my absolute best to not have any barrier to entry. That's why I'm talking about a light-duty anvil and three hammers and a friend. Go get to work.
I love it. I love it. All right, let's finish up with one last tip for blacksmithing, or smithing, really, because it can be anything, goldsmithing, you know, all the things, in a TTRPG from both of you.
Oh, that's a hard one. I like how you hand it off to me so you can think here.
Uh-huh. And it could, yeah, you yeah. could just repeat something we've said today, as in this is more important than a lot of things we've said.
And I think the big thing is, I hate to, you know, limit the players, but yeah, not all blacksmiths are going to be very available to do all of the things. Just because he's a blacksmith doesn't mean he's going to make your suit of armor. Doesn't mean he's going to make your sword. Yeah. He might have some pretty okay iron, and he might be able to repair some farm equipment. That's his limitations. So it's kind of where most of them are going to be at, especially for your first few levels.
Perfect.
And I can't help but beat the drum of, I would love to see the quests given by the blacksmiths. Mm. You want this suit of plate mail? You want me to take this time? Great. I need this material, and I need these power components. Make this happen for me. Bring the magic into the steel and into the craft by accepting quests from blacksmiths. I think that is a woefully underrated quest giver.
It sounds so cool.
I love that. I love that. I think one of the biggest themes of today's episode, really, and something that you as the DM should take away, is that at its core, the blacksmith is a craftsman or craftswoman. They are dedicated to making things, and they love their craft more often than not. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it, right? I'm guessing it's somewhat tiring. You're spending
calories.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so one of the things that I didn't really mention is that all of these additional pieces of equipment add years to my craft. Because my wrist, my elbow, my shoulder only has so many hammer swings in it. So you know, we were talking about you have to have an apprentice, and that's why.
No.
Because that's somebody else's pieces and
body,
parts that you get to wear out as well.
Absolutely. So remember, with everything you do, that the blacksmith or the smith in any situation in your game, they're a craftsman. We really appreciate you just taking your time and showing us and letting us have this really cool experience. You know,
our pleasure.
I can't speak for Caden, but I know I had tons of fun here. Caden, if you want to say anything else as well, you can.
Well, I had no fun. No, thanks for showing me around before Justin got here. I showed up a little bit early, and I had a blast watching you guys actually work. So.
Yeah. Well, if we're here, we're going to put stuff in the fire.
Yeah,
so.
Excellent. Excellent. Cool. Well, we'll let you get back to it. Listener, we'll be back next week with another awesome episode. Until then, let's go ahead and roll initiative.